This is Bill Tiller of Tiller.org. You're listening to BBSRadio.com. Don't forget to tune in to The Infinite Consciousness with Eva Herr every Sunday at 7 p.m. Pacific Time. Enjoy.
Welcome to Infinite Consciousness this week, and thanks for listening. My name is Eva Herr, and I have with us tonight Dr. David Dahlman, and we're going to talk about why doesn't my doctor know this, and conquering irritable bowel syndrome, inflammatory bowel disease, Crohn's disease, and colitis. David's great new book. Thank you, David, for coming on. How are you?
I'm great. How about yourself? Thanks for having me.
I'm great. This is a great book.
Thank you.
I mean, I really think it's a great book. I personally happen to know a few people who've had this problem, and every one of them has either had that resection of their bowels and said nothing helps.
It doesn't, and you really prove a point to me, which I have become acutely aware of as I do this radio tour, as we call it, and that is that the listening audience should understand that this is a really huge problem for lots of people, because what you've proven to me tonight in your first comments are, I have, in all the radio stations that I've talked to, either the host or their producer has said to me, either on air or off air, that they either have the problem or they know someone who has problems like this.
Yeah, and some of the people I know are young people.
Very young. Well, the number of children that are coming down with Crohn's or colitis is astonishing as far as I'm concerned. That's not the way it was 10 years ago.
I know. I'd never heard of it when I was young. So why don't you start off telling people just what this disease is, the symptoms of it, because people may not know what it is their child has or what they themselves have.
Well, we're really talking about two basic conditions. One is called irritable bowel syndrome, and the other is called inflammatory bowel disease. Inflammatory bowel disease encompasses the two best-known ones, which are Crohn's disease and colitis. But there are distinct differences between IBS, or irritable bowel syndrome, and Crohn's and colitis. Crohn's and colitis, part of what goes on with a human being is there is an inflammatory process within the GI tract, as well as an immune system component also there. That is not necessarily present in irritable bowel syndrome. Lots of people are confused about what IBS is or irritable bowel syndrome is. I get patients who call me or come to my office, and they just flat out say to me, I don't know if I've got irritable bowel syndrome. In fact, my other doctor doesn't know if I have irritable bowel syndrome. What do you think?
I thought they were the same thing.
No, IBS is much different than IBD, or irritable inflammatory bowel disease, and it's because of the inflammatory component of it and the immune system component of it. IBS encompasses, it's a syndrome. They call it an irritable bowel syndrome, and that by definition means that there are a number of symptoms that any one person can have. The reason it confuses is one person has two of the symptoms, another person has seven of them, and another person just has gas. That's all they have, but it's still IBS. It's still irritable bowel syndrome. And my definition of irritable bowel syndrome is any uncomfortable symptoms associated with your gastrointestinal system. And they may range, and I'm just going to rattle off a bunch of them here, and this may not be the entire list, but gas, bloating, indigestion, heartburn, reflux, GERD, diarrhea, constipation, alternating diarrhea or constipation, abnormal bowel urgency, abnormal bowel frequency, pain, spasms, vomiting, hemorrhoids. There's probably others. And within that, usually that is the definition of IBS. If you have any of those, one of those, all of them, that's IBS.
I think I'd add depression to that list.
You can get pretty depressed. You know, that's an interesting statement, actually, because a lot of people actually do. The changes in quality of life of the people who suffer from these sorts of conditions, you know, it can definitely lead to depression. It sure as heck leads to not going out of the house once in a while.
Mm-hmm.
You're embarrassed to go to church. You can't go out amongst your friends, etc. And it makes people really think about their daily schedule.
Interesting. I'm just so thankful when I read this book that I don't have this problem or any one of my children.
Yeah.
So what about Crohn's disease?
Let's talk about what the differences are between IBD or the Crohn's and colitis folks and the irritable bowel syndrome. The entire list of symptoms that I mentioned for irritable bowel syndrome patients can be present in a Crohn's or colitis patient, but usually what differentiates the condition, other than a doctor doing a series of tests and telling you that you have Crohn's or colitis, But symptom-wise, what usually occurs in Crohn's and colitis patients that doesn't occur in irritable bowel syndrome patients is the presence of blood or mucus in the bowel movement. Now, that doesn't have to be present to have a diagnosis of Crohn's or colitis, but usually it is. And then the medical definition really exists that there is an inflammatory process and what they call an autoimmune condition, which simply means that your immune system is revolting against you, and it is creating some chemistry that will have inflammatory consequences to a certain part of your bowel.
What about colitis? What's the difference with that one?
No, Crohn's and colitis is what I was just talking
about.
Oh,
okay.
Yeah.
Sorry. So do we need to run to our doctor and get some pharmaceuticals?
Well, if you do, you will be prone to having the condition probably forever because the medications that are on the market right now are not, and will be on the market forever as long as we live. They will only be attempts to manage, suppress, or mask the symptoms. In other words, they don't address the cause. They will only work on the symptoms and not always successfully. So if your gastroenterologist has told you there's no cure and you'll have this forever, he's right if you follow his advice. But using all natural therapy and the protocol that I've discussed in Why Doesn't My Doctor Know This, as far as I know right now, this is really the only physician-designed step-by-step natural treatment plan that uses all natural supplements along with temporary dietary changes. And all these conditions, IBS, Crohn's, colitis, they all can be resolved. They can go away, and you can get off of your medications, if you're on any, for these conditions by using the natural protocol.
And is that pretty much 100? I mean, I know nothing's 100%, but, you know, the woman I sent you the other day, I mean, she said her daughter had basically felt like nothing helped.
Right.
So can they count on pretty much if they take these step-by-step directions that you give them with diet changes and supplements and enzymes, that something positive will happen?
I have really tremendous success with this. The vast majority, if not really close to most people who contact me, but they have to do a few things. It's one thing to buy the book, which is a great start. You get an understanding of my protocol, who I am, etc. But the folks who allow me to consult with them and work them through the step-by-step protocol using the all-natural supplements and the temporary dietary changes and some of the lab work that especially Crohn's and colitis patients need, their success rate is extraordinarily high.
That's amazing.
But, yeah, it really is. And it's you know, one of the reasons even that it is, it's not like I'm the greatest doctor in the world or anything like that. I've learned this protocol from other doctors and some of the laboratories that I've taken the time to consult with and learn from. And the reason that the protocol is successful, I think the book is a great example of I have simply found a great way to communicate it, but the reason it's successful is because we address 9 separate variables. All of them are well known in all the scientific literature to cause gastrointestinal problems in people. So we will address all of these. And of those 9 separate variables, again, my next patient that I see on Monday morning will have 2 or 3 of them that we have to absolutely address. The next patient after that person will have 6 or 7 of them. The patient after that will have 1.
Mm-hmm.
But the point is, because we address so many variables, I've got this silly engineer's male mind. And in other words, if something's broken, I want to know why. And if you're going to hand me a wrench to fix it, I want to know that that wrench is going to work. So I'm not throwing out some sort of suggestion or theories here. This is very, very proven and true therapy that just does phenomenal things to reestablishing balance to the gastrointestinal system. The health and the efficiency comes back. The symptoms calm down. And IBS, Crohn's, and colitis can become a thing of the past.
Well, before we get on any deeper, I want to, just in case somebody has to leave in the middle, I want you to tell them how to contact you and where you are.
Yes, I have a website that's basically devoted to gastrointestinal problems. It is called drdahlman.com, and the simple spelling on that is just drdahlman, drdahlman.com, and they can go there for lots of different information, including how to get in touch with me, as well as links to Amazon and Barnes & Noble in order to purchase the book.
Okay. Now, when I started reading this book, it looks like, to a layman like me, that everything started with taking antibiotics when we were a kid. Is that right?
Well, it may very well be. I spent a lot of time in Why Doesn't My Doctor Know This talking about some of the lifestyle issues that I believe contribute to a deterioration of the health of the gastrointestinal system. And one of the things that it's just impossible to ignore are antibiotics. And the reason is because antibiotics kill bacteria. We must have a population of good bacteria living in our gastrointestinal system. Now, the antibiotics we use are necessary for ear infections, sore throats, bronchitis, urinary tract infections, whatever type of infection that you have, they do a wonderful job there. But the unintended consequence that your doctor has never told you is that, and it's on, what's really interesting is when you pick up your prescription, this discussion is in the insert that tells you all about this medication that you're taking, but none of us ever read that. And the point is that even the traditional medical world knows that the antibiotic is going to disrupt, damage, or alter the beneficial bacterial balance that lives in the gastrointestinal system. Once that happens, it begins a cascade of events that can lead to irritable bowel syndrome, or for the unlucky ones, for Crohn's or colitis.
What I want to add something to that, too. You know, a lot of people that take antibiotics also get recessive gums and arthritis because it eats away the stuff in their joints. So what do you suggest if somebody has to take an antibiotic? Does colloidal silver work, or
no,
do you have any recommendations?
If an antibiotic is against the life of those bacteria, a probiotic is in favor of it, I guess we could say.
Mm-hmm.
So part of the protocol, and why doesn't my doctor know this, is to give a patient good probiotics. Now, what are probiotics? Those are things like Acidophilus and Bifidus. They're in health food stores. They're in lots of yogurt products, which are unfortunately, we can talk about that later, very ineffective. But the point is that whether you're trying to overcome IBS, Crohn's, or colitis, or whether you have an infection and you have to take an antibiotic, the solution to not suffering the damage and the unintended consequence that the antibiotic will do is to take a good probiotic product during the time you are on the antibiotic, and then for 1 or maybe even 2 months afterwards, in order to make sure that you bring back the population of the beneficial bacteria.
Let's go back to that yogurt thing, because some people think the first thing you do is run get some buttermilk or some yogurt at the store, but that really doesn't work for pasteurization reasons and many other reasons. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Yes, and you're right about the pasteurization, the homogenization. I talk again, and why doesn't my doctor know this, all about dairy products and how horrible they are for humans. If you were a baby cow, it's no problem, as long as the mama cow didn't send it off to the factory to get overheated. But the point is that dairy product, when you take a dairy product that contains additional good probiotics or beneficial bacteria, and there are so many of them coming onto the market now because the major manufacturers are now getting hip to the idea that the public is watching the media and seeing that probiotics are necessary for human health. So they're putting additional probiotics in some products. They are not good products because, number one, there's two things that go on with those products. Number one, there's not enough probiotic, in other words, the Acidophilus and Bifidus cultures, there's not enough of those cultures in the product to be therapeutic. And the second problem is dairy products are the number one dietary villain in this country right now. So you're working against yourself if you have a problem with dairy by taking some of these products, even for the additional probiotics, that are not therapeutic enough to make a hill of beans worth a difference.
So where do you get the products? What products do you use? I mean, you can't just go down and buy Danon. So what works, and where do you get it?
Well, you get good probiotics. The health food stores may or may not have them. It just depends on your store. And then which one do you buy? Because you'll be looking at a shelf there that probably has 30 different types on it. I've used a specific type. I have an online store attached to drdahlman.com. And in Why Doesn't My Doctor Know This, as well as a video that I provide everyone who purchases my book, I talk about the probiotics. I've used them for 15 years. And the reason I use them, remember back to my male engineer's mind here, I don't fix things that aren't broken. And these probiotics do the job. In almost every case, they do exactly what we're asking them to do. And so people who buy the book or visit my website could certainly visit my online store for the ones that I'm using in my office.
Okay. One of the things people assume is that Acidophilus is probiotic. There's more to it than just that, isn't there?
Well, there's a number of different strains of probiotics. The two major ones that people tend to recognize are the Lactobacillus acidophilus, or Lactobacillus, and there's a number of other strains, and then bifidus, and there are also a number of strains of those. There are varying opinions over which strains are better. So Lactobacillus acidophilus, not to get too detailed here, but is a genus and species, and it doesn't mention the strain. So you can buy different genuses and species, but the strains are getting more and more important. And the company that I use that provides me with my probiotics does continual research, and they're constantly changing and sort of bringing up to date the strains that we use. So there's lots of things you could find in health food stores that are sort of passe products. They've been there a long time. They're not keeping up with the latest data. They may or may not work, but it's always good to have a company behind you that supplies products that are up to date with the latest science.
I'm curious, why do our doctors not tell us about these things?
Well, they're just
do
not
they
trained
know?
To. They're just not trained. They walk into the medical school coming out of college, and the entire focus is to, you know, you learn about the human body, learn about disease and medicine and all that other stuff. But now let's exclude a few people here. Let's exclude some of our emergency medical people and our really fine surgeons. I mean, if heaven forbid you need emergency care or you need surgery, these are the best people on the planet.
Of course, acute care.
Exactly, and they're doing the best job they can. It's the people who are trying to treat chronic conditions, whether it's IBS, Crohn's, colitis, diabetes, arthritis, asthma, even headaches or rheumatoid arthritis or heart disease, female hormone problems, that sort of stuff. The reason I think that they don't know this is when they walk into medical school, a lot of the medical school books, pencils, papers, clocks on the wall, it's all pharmaceutical provided. And they are taught to be diagnosticians, in other words, diagnose the condition, in other words, name it, and then write you a prescription.
All right.
And as I said earlier in this conversation, so with IBS, Crohn's, colitis, as well as other chronic health conditions, there are no cures here. You can't, other than antibiotics, and we could have a lively discussion about cancer cures. Other than that, name for me some cure that exists out there right now in traditional medicine. It doesn't. These drugs manage the condition, and doctors are not stepping outside their box, shall we say, and moving into alternative medicine as much as they probably should. Although, having said that, I will tell you, I've done this 15 years professionally, and going to all the seminars, et cetera, there are far more medical doctors out there in the seminars along with us alternative guys than there used to be.
I'm so glad to hear that. And I really am. So let's talk a minute about supplements. Glutamine, amino acids, what role do they play?
Well, one of the mainstay, other than the probiotics, which we've already talked about, which is certainly part of the protocol, main part of the protocol, the other mainstay is to utilize nutrients that feed the tissue that lines your gastrointestinal system. Normally, the GI tract will find these nutrients from the food that you're eating, but a lot of people who have these problems aren't eating a whole lot. And even if they are eating a whole lot, they may not be getting, they may not be able to derive the nutrition from that food. And even if they have a perfectly balanced organic diet, if their gastrointestinal system isn't working very well, they still aren't able to derive, to break the food down, to get the nutrients out of it, and then absorb it. So the supplements that I mentioned, the ingredients that I mentioned, are actually, in Why Doesn't My Doctor Know This, are actually available in just a handful of products. I describe all the ingredients in the book because you have to be careful about the FDA, and you don't want to make a drug and disease claims,
right,
et cetera. So in the back of the book, in a reference section, I do mention the exact products that I use. In the video, I mention it. And the amino acid that you mentioned earlier, glutamine, is one of the main fuels and nutrients that the tissue that lines the gastrointestinal system is looking for in the food that we eat. So we provide it to each patient in, again, therapeutic doses over a short period of time in order to feed the tissue and make it healthier and happier.
So the next thing I want to ask about is, I learned something here. I've actually heard it for a long time, but I never really knew why. Don't drink liquids during or directly after meals. I don't know if anybody that does that. What's the importance of that? I mean,
you mean most people drink during a meal, right?
Yes.
Yeah, I mean, we've all sat next to a person in a restaurant, or maybe the person listening to us right now is that person. But the waiter comes over and fills up your glass two or three times during the meal, and you're putting in a lot of liquid along with the food that you're eating. That rule is in there in order to help people, especially the people who suffer from things like gas, bloating, indigestion, maybe a little heartburn, because a lot of those symptoms could be, and this is not the only reason that those symptoms might occur in a human, but those symptoms might occur because if you dilute your digestive enzymes, you will not be able to break the food down in a proper amount of time. So if you eat some food, it goes into your stomach, you're secreting some digestive enzymes into your stomach, and you throw in 2 glasses of liquid, of I don't care what it is, whether it's water or anything else, you're going to dilute the digestive enzymes, and you will slow down the digestion process. When you do that, gas occurs, and pain occurs, and stomach aches occur, and you can burp it up, and all sorts of negative things that can occur with it. So that rule is in there, to not drink during a meal or for 45 or about an hour for an hour after you've eaten, in order to not dilute your digestive enzymes.
Okay.
You can break the rule a little bit. I mean, you get to swallow some medication or some supplements or something like that. You can break the rule just a tad, but it's best not to do it.
People who have these symptoms and you tell them to go off dairy, how important is it to be rigid about that? You know, one spoonful of creamer in your coffee. How can one spoonful of creamer in your coffee?
Yeah, and why doesn't my doctor know this? I have a chapter called The Big Four, 100% Don't You Dare Break Them Dietary Rules. Now, that's a really stupid name for that chapter. But what I'm trying to accomplish with it is to get people's attention, to really pay attention to what I'm saying. And I do explain a lot more about why in the chapter. But the reason is that I never found success by suggesting to somebody, why don't you cut back on this? Let's cut back and see what happens. And it was illustrated to me many years ago by a female patient that I had, and she had IBS, and she was probably, unfortunately, experiencing diarrhea 10 or 15 times a day. So we got into our protocol and working with her, and we probably got 6-8 weeks into the protocol, and she just wasn't getting any better. And that doesn't happen a whole lot in terms of my patient population, certainly now, but one of the things that she illustrated to me was, she said to me about 8 weeks into it that, Dr. Dahlman, maybe I should have said something to you because, you know, I heard you tell me that you have to give up all dairy, and I heard you tell me to read the labels of all the different products that I have in my refrigerator and my freezer and my cupboard, and you did tell me that the non-dairy creamer was not a non-dairy creamer. It actually has dairy in it, but I hate black coffee, and I was willing to give up my cream, but I had some dairy creamer in my cupboard, and I made what I thought to be an intellectual decision, a very rational decision. I read the ingredient list, and yeah, you're right, it does have dairy in it, but it's listed fourth or fifth on the label, and I'm only putting a teaspoon in each of 2 cups of coffee. And everything else is a chemical, so how much dairy could there be in the 2 teaspoons that I'm using? And once she gave up the non-dairy creamer, within 2 weeks her bowels were comfortable, solid, and very, very well formed. The diarrhea was gone.
That just amazes me.
Yeah, what that illustrates to us is that I don't know, and neither does the patient, how sensitive they may be to any of the dietary villains that we're trying to identify for them.
I would imagine that somebody that has these kind of problems, I'm going to get a little bit off topic here a little bit, that they, you know, all of their electrolytes get gone, and I would imagine their autonomic nervous system gets off and that they have extreme fatigue and tiredness and sleep problems.
Yeah, I don't think that's off topic at all, because one of the things, you know, people come to me because they know that I specialize in the IBS and Crohn's and colitis, the gastrointestinal stuff. They'll come to me with those complaints as their major issue.
Palpitations, maybe.
Yeah, but when we take a history of the patient, then they'll mention all the other things that are going on. And I have said for years, for almost the entire time I've been in practice, that the easiest thing that you can do to improve someone's health, and just sit back and watch all these other symptoms besides the gastrointestinal problems, watch all the other symptoms fade away, is do 2 things. Change their diet and improve the efficiency of the gastrointestinal system. And once you do that, then the headaches and the heart palpitations, the asthma, the skin conditions, psoriasis, eczema, hives, I've got a number of other things that I list in the book, actually, which are escaping me at the moment, but the point is any other health conditions may fade away if you just improve the health of the GI tract and change somebody's diet. That's how important all of this is.
I wouldn't mind hearing a few stories. I know my listeners like to hear stories to give them hope You have a few stories you can share? And then we'll get back into the meat of the stuff.
Oh, I guess, see, I probably have a few stories. One of the most important things that we do, especially with our Crohn's and colitis patients, is to, we run a food allergy test on them. And it's my belief that people with Crohn's and colitis actually can't get well unless you identify your food allergies. And I remember a young man that came to see me. He was in his early 30s, and he was 6'4". He was used to weighing about 195 pounds or 205, something like that. He was down to 160, and he was getting pretty scared. He had some bloody diarrhea and frequent all day long, and you know the doctors had just given him some medication that really wasn't working very well. So once we ran the food allergy panel, he was allergic to a number of foods, but one of the foods he had the highest level of sensitivity were olives, which means olive oil. And when I gave him that one particular result, he just started laughing, and I said, "Well, what's so funny?" And he says, "My wife is Italian. There's olive oil on everything that I eat." And you know, within 2 months, he was back to pretty much normal. Had gained already 20 pounds, and was doing quite well. Now, I don't want any of your listeners to think that I'm suggesting that olives or olive oil are bad for anybody. It was bad for him,
right?
Because he was an individual, which is different than anybody else listening. And his set of allergies are different than an allergy panel we would run on anybody else listening. That was just specific to his particular situation.
I just found it amazing that people are so hopeless.
Yes.
And that you're telling stories here that people get significant results sometimes in 2 or 3 weeks. It's just hard to believe.
Yeah, we don't cure anybody in 2 or 3 weeks. But what we're trying to achieve in the early stages, and some people are luckier than others, but there are people within the first couple of weeks that see dramatic changes in a positive direction, and they may have had the condition 15 years. And all you have to do is take care of those 9 variables that I talked about, give people really, really great high-quality, all-natural supplements, and make sure that they stay away from certain foods just for a short period of time. And it's amazing some of the things that we can get done. There are other, you know, some of the unlucky folks are still struggling, you know, 2 months down the road, but most of the time, I mean, I'm kind of like a pit bull with this. I don't like to lose when it comes to my patients' health. But most of the time, these patients, almost every one of them, will see a complete turnaround.
That's amazing. So let's talk about supplements for a minute. Can the listeners just go into CVS or their local drugstore and get these things off the shelf?
Well, I mean, I certainly list the ingredients. It would be, and it's funny, I've had people email me and with the list of ingredients and say, where do I find all these things? Because, like I said, because of FDA rules, I didn't want to write the book where I was just promoting up these products. I wanted to sort of give the reasoning behind the ingredients that we were using so that everybody knew the logic behind it. But if you buy the book and you just look at all the ingredients, you're going to have a very, you'll find some of them. Some of them will be a little harder to find. There is a free video associated with the purchase of the book, and if you go to that website actually to view the video, you'll be able to see a video of me showing everybody the exact products that I use. The same products are listed in the back of the book in the resource section. You can buy these products at a number of different sources. Other physicians have them, or you can go to my online store at drdahlman.com. And there's an IBS package that you can purchase. There is a Crohn's and colitis package that you can purchase. If you walk into GNC or CVS or your local grocery store or even your local Whole Foods or other health food stores, you will be taking sort of a guess at whether or not the products that you think are similar to mine are going to work. So that's just a buyer beware thing.
I want to say this. You know, I don't know how comfortable you feel, but I'll say it. You know, some people think things as simple as magnesium. Well, I'll just go get the cheap brand at the drugstore.
Yeah.
What they don't realize is a thing as simple as magnesium, there are various forms of it.
Yes, very different
molecules. And they get magnesium oxide if they go to just pull it off the shelves, and that's about as absorbable as a grain of sand, so
yeah,
it's not going to help any. And thus they lose faith that this really isn't doing anything because they don't have the right product.
Absolutely.
And why the drugstores do this, I don't know, but if you ask your pharmacist, like I did the other day, why do you guys do this? Well, we do have a magnesium citrate down there on the bottom, but we only have one kind, and I don't know why we put those up there on the shelf.
And if you use too much of that, it gives you diarrhea. So you have to be careful with everything.
Right.
And there's lots of different forms, as you said, of magnesium, different molecular structures, different
of all the herbs and minerals.
Of everything. And mm-hmm. so there are lots. If you are a price buyer, you are going to wind up getting very poor quality, poorly thought out products. Usually, they are not all created. All probiotics are not created equal. All magnesium is not created equal. Women think that they need all this calcium for their bones, et cetera. Boy, if you're taking the wrong kind, you're just wasting your time.
Exactly.
It's not going to do you one iota of good, and you can have upset stomachs and bowel changes, et cetera. So I hate to say that the more you pay for a supplement, the better off you are, because that's not exactly true. But one thing you can definitely say is if you're a price buyer and trying to buy the cheapest thing you can find,
you're probably not going to get better.
Yeah, it's just not going to work out real well.
Now that you brought up women and calcium,
okay,
because they're going to say, well, where do I get my calcium if I can't have milk?
Yeah, I get that question all the time.
Exactly. Talk about that for a minute.
Yeah, the first thing to think about is we have bigger fish to fry, so to speak, than worrying about your bones for 2 or 3 months. So if we honestly have to take you off of all your calciums and whatever you're using, you're not going to die of osteoporosis over the next two or three months of treatment. Now, I don't want to be cavalier about it. We can also, I can also make some suggestions of some good calciums that you could take during my protocol. But the problem with milk, and a lot of women rely on using dairy products because they think they're doing their bones some good. But one thing I'd like any woman out there right now to think about is, think about your mother, think about your aunt, think about your sister, think about your grandmother, any other woman who you've known who has told you in conversation or you found out is suffering from osteopenia or osteoporosis, and they have the problem. Well, one thing that you can be sure of is they probably never ran into a doctor like me. So in other words, they ate all the dairy products they ever wanted to their entire life, and they still have this problem.
Right.
Now, again, it's not that simple because female hormones are involved, exercise is involved, there's more to it than that, but it's not about eating dairy products. You'll never see a giraffe with osteoporosis, and they stopped eating or drinking milk when they were probably about 3 months old. So the point is that you can do without any dairy product. You can get great calcium sources from plant material in your diet, number one. Good supplementation and lots of exercise is also very helpful. But you have no a baby growing doesn't have the need for it. A growing teenager doesn't have the need for it. No human needs the dairy product. And as you mentioned earlier in the show, they're homogenized and pasteurized. And the reason that this is such a horrendous product is it's a dead product. It's not absorbable. Now, one little caveat to this is if you have access to raw milk, in other words, the cow's in the barn over there, and you go over and get it every day, that's a different ballgame. That product is actually a lot better for you than what you find on your grocery store shelves.
What about goat milk or goat cheese and things like that?
That's fine, but they also homogenize and pasteurize that too.
You know, yesterday I was in my grocery store. You know how they have those little kiosks that have people giving things away?
Yeah.
And they had a new milk that they were trying to put off on people called Smart Milk.
Oy.
And he said, yes, and we put special probiotics in it, and we put special calcium in it. And so I said, well, are your probiotics alive? And he looked at me like I was crazy, and I said, do you pasteurize it and homogenize it? I mean, not to knock on that, because, you know, there's a reason that happened.
Yeah.
But it kills, it's, you know, x-rays, it kills things.
Yeah.
So what you're getting is dead.
Well,
right?
And the other thing is, if I was a yogurt manufacturer, how do I make yogurt? I get some milk, and I put some probiotics in it, live probiotics, and they ferment the milk into yogurt. So how do they have milk with probiotics in it that's not fermented?
I don't know. So,
yeah.
Very good point. I don't know what to say. So let's talk about gluten products and
okay.
artificial sweeteners, because I'm a big advocate of stevia and raw natural sugars.
Yes.
And xylitol. So can you tell us what's wrong with those?
Well, if anybody is using an artificial sweetener, whether it's NutraSweet or aspartame or sucralose or Splenda, there's also another one out there which people may not be aware of. It's called acesulfame K. Sometimes it's listed as acesulfame potassium because the K stands for potassium. These are all artificial sweeteners. The manufacturers love to tell us that they're from natural sources, and then therefore it's not a problem, like sucralose, just a sugar molecule that they sort of rearrange some of the molecules in it. Well, when you rearrange nature, your body will not understand it. It's not programmed to understand chemicals and things that are done in a laboratory. So anytime you take an artificial sweetener, you're going to pay a price somewhere along the line, and maybe Aunt Betty or Grandma Betty won't really think much is going wrong until she can't remember her youngest grandchild's name when she's 72 years old, and everybody will just think that she's old. But it could be some neurological issues, could be memory problems, could be other health issues along with these. It's too detailed, honestly, to get into the molecular structure of all these and all the dangers associated with each. I do describe a bit of that, if not all of it, in Why Doesn't My Doctor Know This? But one of the other reasons that I take these artificial sweeteners away from people, because, again, Why Doesn't My Doctor Know This? Is about gastrointestinal problems. Well, if you go onto the FDA's website and you look at their information about aspartame and NutraSweet, they have a list of 92 symptoms that people have complained about and that they've actually confirmed are problematic for people who take NutraSweet and aspartame. Indigestion's number 5, diarrhea's number 7. And there's about 6 other gastrointestinal complaints in that 92 symptom list. So I insist that people stay away from that stuff just because it could be causing them some trouble.
I'm a big proponent of that.
Yeah, absolutely.
And
gluten's a whole other issue, though. That's a bigger discussion.
So talk a little bit about that.
Well, gluten, the protocol that I describe in Why Doesn't My Doctor Know This? I have one protocol for IBS patients or irritable bowel syndrome patients. I have a slightly different protocol for the Crohn's and colitis patients in that we just use one different product, and we also insist on a food allergy test for the Crohn's and colitis patients. And if you remember earlier, I said that I think that that's very important that people get that test done in order to get over Crohn's and colitis. But one of the other differences between IBS patients and Crohn's and colitis patients is I ask them to not only give the Crohn's and colitis patients, I ask to not only give up dairy products, but also gluten-containing foods. Again, these are temporary dietary elimination, but there is so much research associated with it, and I've seen it in my 15 years of practice, that gluten can cause the gastrointestinal system, especially in Crohn's and colitis patients, a lot of problems.
Tell us, just so everybody makes sure they understand, what exactly is gluten?
Gluten is a protein that is found in wheat, oats, barley, and rye. We can argue a little bit about oats because there is some controversy about that, so that there's a little wiggle room with oats. But I just take all that away just to make sure. And wheat is made into flour, which is made into breads and cookies and cakes and crackers and bagels and pasta and things like that. Oats are oatmeal and granola usually. Barley is, of course, sort of interesting. There's a sweetener made out of it. Barley is added to soups. And then barley is also made into vinegars. So you have to be very careful with that. And then rye is made into rye bread. But gluten is a problem. Anybody who has celiac disease or knows somebody who has celiac disease, they know about gluten. And there's lots of new products that are gluten-free in all the major health food stores because so many people are becoming aware of this. And gluten needs to be removed from the body or from the diet. Remember my rule, 100% don't you dare break them dietary rules. Again, temporarily, just to see what we can achieve by taking one of these major dietary villains away from people.
So what do they eat? What's the difference? Maybe spelt wheat bread. What's the difference?
Spelt wheat is a different type of wheat than the durum wheat that is grown in the United States.
Okay.
It does still have a tad of gluten in it, but I have found that my patients respond actually very well the low levels of gluten that are found in spelt bread and other spelt products. Now, if we get deeper into the protocol, they're not getting well, they're eating a lot of spelt, I may ask them to take it away. Mm-hmm. But for the average person, the bread tastes just like whole wheat bread. Mm-hmm. There's spelt pasta. There are cookies and cakes and other things made from spelt. There are rice breads. There are other types like buckwheat and breads made with cornmeal and tapioca and potato flour. They're getting very, very good in these food manufacturing companies to make alternative products because the growing number of people, not only with IBS, Crohn's, and colitis, but other problems with gluten. This is a food that really humans, again, like dairy, we don't need. But look, if you think about all the products made from dairy products and from wheat, and how much of your diet is part of that for the listeners listening, It's amazing how much we eat, and it's amazing how ill the people of the United States are.
What about the order of the foods? Is there an importance of that, the order in which you eat foods?
You know, now you're sort of mentioning the old macrobiotic food combining rules of, I don't know what decade that was. Was that the 60s or 70s or something? I don't really talk about food combining much in this protocol. I've not found it necessary. I've got so many rules, and people have to rearrange their diet. Logistically, it's different because you have to make out your grocery list differently. You have to look at food differently. You have to buy different things. You have to prepare foods differently. I haven't really burdened anybody with food combining, although the rule that we mentioned earlier about not drinking liquids during a meal, that's an old food combining rule from the macrobiotic days.
Okay. Well, I want to say this for you. This book is something that even I could follow. I mean,
Great. You
don't know what that means, but
yeah.
I mean, I could do this. You put it in a simple format that somebody can understand
exactly.
And not be all
that
confused
was...
and have to go back from page and flip back here and over there. I mean, it's a very reasonable and easily interpretable book.
And purposely. I wanted to make it so, number one, you can work your way through it in a step-by-step manner, just like my step-by-step protocol. I wanted to recreate the experience that people have in my clinic. So I wrote it in a sort of a conversational tone. I try to be a little funny here or there. I don't know how successful I am with that. But it is easy to follow. And the other thing you can do is you can take this, you can attempt to do this on your own. You can attempt to do it with your other physician. Or you can actually get in touch with me, and I will be happy to consult with anybody who's listening and help them work their way through this entire protocol, all the supplements, the dietary changes, the allergy tests, all of that.
We've got about 15 minutes, so I'm going to give you four things that I'd like for you to do the best you can.
Oh, boy.
Medication side effects, genetically modified foods. There was something else. Let's see if I can find it. I don't remember you touching on GMOs, but...
I don't think I do.
I think... I just wanted to hear what you had to say about it.
Well, I definitely have
opinions. Colonics and Candida.
Okay. All right. So medical side effects, I mean medicine side effects, just in general, the fact that all medicines have negative consequence. You can't take a medication without having an unintended consequence to your body.
And many of them are gut-related, right?
Well, I think you will definitely find an impact to the GI tract. We talked about antibiotics that kill the good bacteria that lives inside of you. But I don't care what you're taking. I don't care if it's aspirin or Tylenol, Advil, Buffarin, any of the pain relievers. They definitely have horrible side effects to your gastrointestinal system. I don't think people realize this, but there are people who die from taking too many Tylenol and aspirin.
Right.
And everybody thinks because you walk into the pharmacy that it's just a very benign product. They are not. And then the overall statement that you can make about medication is that the toxicity to the liver is usually what is the biggest concern. And again, back to those inserts that we all never read, the antibiotics will talk about the damage to the probiotic balance in the GI tract, and any other medication will talk about liver consequence. And they all have it. It's just that, you know, we can live with it to some degree. Our liver is an extremely powerful organ, fortunately, but that doesn't mean that you live your whole life without consequence if you're taking medication.
Mm-hmm.
What's my next subject?
Let's see. GMOs, Candida.
GMO is a good one. The genetically modified foods, you know, I made the comment earlier that if you eat something that has been altered, in other words, like we were talking about artificial sweeteners, but these are not natural products. Something has been done to them in a laboratory, so your body's not going to understand it. As far as I'm concerned, one thing you can be sure of is if man has created it, altered it, or processed it, your body's going to have a hard time with it. And here we are creating genetically modified foods that, again, the body has the ability, innate intelligence, to be able to understand food and the chemistry. These are signals. We think it's a carrot, but it's not. There are molecules and energy in there that carry signals with them that communicate to our cells.
Right.
If we create a product that has a different genetic code to it, we are not going to understand it, and there is going to be a health consequence to it. This is something that should be fought. Nobody should buy them. You should ask questions in your local supermarket and even in the health food stores, how much genetically modified food is here, and you should stay away from it like the plague.
And you'll be shocked. And I think, you know, some of the You can't buy an ear of corn that's not genetically modified. You can't buy any corn product like canola oil or soy. And if it has an extra electron or some other building blocks like you were saying, you're not going to be able to digest it, among other things, as well as it's going to go somewhere and form cancers and problems. They've already found that, don't you? Have you read that?
That absolutely would be one of the consequences of GMOs, and that's because, again, the body's not going to understand it, and some of the biggest effects that it's ultimately going to have on your system is it will affect your immune system. And if you degrade your immune system in any way, shape, or form, then, you know, lots of different problems are around. Heaven forbid cancer, but, you know, the people who don't get cancer have stronger immune systems.
Right. Okay, the next thing was candida. You know, when I have talked to various conventional medical doctors, internists, for example, they laugh when you talk about systemic candida.
Yep. So, well, again, why doesn't my doctor know this? They're not trained for this stuff.
An average person walking around doesn't know about it. They get shocked when you talk about systemic candida.
Yes.
What is that? How do you? What are some of the symptoms, and how can you deal with it?
Okay. The candida organism, it's called Candida albicans. It's a yeast. And everybody listening right now as we speak has it walking around on your skin. It's also in all mucosal membranes of the body. It's also in the gastrointestinal system. It is a normal part of living a human life. It can overgrow. And the reason, one of the main reasons it does, is that when you take antibiotics, back to the doggone consequences of antibiotics again, when you take an antibiotic and you kill a lot of the bacteria living in the bowel, antibiotics don't kill yeast. So the yeast look around when you're taking the antibiotic, they look around and they go, wow, look at all the extra real estate, and they start reproducing themselves. And that's why how you can get an abnormal yeast overgrowth in the bowel. And for women listening who are prone to chronic vaginal yeast infections, same thing happens there. There is a combination of bacteria and yeast in all, like I said, all mucosal membranes. When you take the antibiotic, that balance changes and the yeast overgrow. A worse situation is that we can actually see yeast migrate into other parts of the body that they should never be in, bloodstream and go to other places in the body. And this can cause tremendous amount of health problems. It can vary with lots of people. Lots of different things can happen. I mean, it can wind up in your ears, in the back of your mouth. It's called a thrush. It can be systemic throughout the body. And it requires a very aggressive protocol along with some dietary rules in order to get rid of it.
I think it's a very prevalent problem, but not people not being educated about it. What would some of the symptoms be so they can tell if they think they might have that problem?
Boy, there's no way I can run through that, to be honest with you. Maybe you'll have a better list than I do. The problem that you have is, and as a holistic physician whose job really is to figure out what's going on with a patient, because they're coming to me because they're just dissatisfied with all the other answers that their other doctor has given them. And so at some stage of the game, if a woman comes to me and she has, you know, just a myriad of symptoms and problems all over the place, and also while I'm taking her history, says to me that she has chronic vaginal yeast infections, bingo, I'm going to look at yeast really, really hard. Or she went through thrush, or she has athlete's foot, or male or female has any of this. I'm going to look at candida really, really hard. But the problem is, so many symptoms, almost anything, can be because you have an overgrowth of yeast, because it does so many different things to the body, and it also affects your immune system and causes all sorts of problems. So almost anything can be. And there's so much information out about this, and I do caution people to some degree also, that in spite of the fact that you're asking me for a list, which I'm trying to sort of dance my way around, because I can honestly give you a great
list. I was really thinking about things like fatigue and brain fog and sleep problems. If you can't find it anywhere else and you know you've had antibiotics, think about it.
That's a great explanation. That's far better than the one that I was giving you. That's absolutely correct. Absolutely correct.
Okay, there are two more things. Enzymes, we've not touched on that, and we've not touched on colonics.
Yeah, the enzymes are, a part of this protocol. The all-natural protocol in Why Doesn't My Doctor Know This involves the probiotics we've talked about, feeding the tissue with certain amino acids that we've already discussed. For Crohn's and colitis patients, we'll use some anti-inflammatory herbs and other compounds. And for everybody who suffers from GI tract problems, we also have to think about the use of digestive enzymes. A couple times in the show today, I've already mentioned about things that can cause indigestion, gas, bloating, burping, heartburn, GERD, reflux, acid reflux. A lot of that can be conquered by taking the digestive enzymes because, as I mentioned earlier, a lot of those symptoms are there because you're not breaking your food down in a specific amount of time. So when you lose the health and balance and efficiency of your gastrointestinal system, sometimes what you also lose is the ability to produce the digestive enzymes that our organs are supposed to. So therapeutically, again, for a short period of time, we will give the patient digestive enzymes and to see what sort of an effect that can have on us.
I want to just mention this, too. Now, people think when they hear enzymes, they can run out to the store and get some Beano or run to the health food store and get enzymes. Enzymes are very specific.
Yes.
So you need a little bit of guidance with somebody that knows something about them, like your doctor.
Yes, Beano and lactate are very weak enzymes that really don't do what you really, really want them to do. The enzymes that we use a form of hydrochloric acid, which comes from beets, and that helps supplement the acid that the stomach produces. And for any of you who think you have a stomach acid or a lot of acid in your stomach or having heartburn or you're tasting acid come up in your GI tract, the solution is not to not take digestive enzymes or hydrochloric acid, and the solution is not to take Tums, etc., in order to buffer it down. The solution is take more digestive enzymes. And that can be very helpful. We also use some pancreatic enzymes, amylase, lipase, and protease. And that's a sort of a broad spectrum of digestive enzymes that are specific to different types of foods. And it's just like we said earlier, you have to be careful with some of the
right
products that you buy because they are not all created equal.
Right. Now we've got about 4 minutes. We didn't do colonics yet, but I want you to take this time. If we have some time left over, you can do it. Talk about anything that you want to talk about that we've not already talked about, and make sure you tell people how to find you again.
Okay, that's fine. Colonics, I talk about in the back of Why Doesn't My Doctor Know This, and a lot of people call me and ask me, well, do you know anybody who's a colon therapist? I'd like to go get a colonic, and then when I ask them why, usually they've got irritable bowel syndrome, maybe the constipation type. And the problem with a colonic is that it's sort of treating a problem like a traditional medical doctor would. Here's your pill, here's your protocol, and you'll have to do it every once in a while because it really doesn't get to the cause of the problem. The problem with constipation is a lack of good bacteria. The tissue has changed and is not as efficient as it could be. You may be eating foods that are causing you to be constipated. So the use of colonics you have to be very careful with. And colonic therapists will tell you, oh, I see the yeast coming through the tube and there's a little window there and there's probiotics in the treatment, etc. None of it is as therapeutic or high quality as what you can get in a protocol like I describe in Why Doesn't My Doctor Know This?
Yeah, I think another thing, I had a colonic one time, and I really felt better, but I didn't know that you had to go back and supplement with a lot of probiotics, and I paid for it.
Well, I mean, a once-in-a-while usage of it, or, I mean, if you got really heavy-duty constipation with impaction or something, maybe that would work, but you've got to be really, really careful. Really
yeah.
careful with that. It's not necessary. The bowel is a self-cleaning organ. I'm not in favor of laxatives or colonics. Let's get to the cause of the problem and really solve the problem.
Okay, we're about out of time. Tell us one more time how to find you, how to connect up with you. It's a great book. It really is.
Yeah, my website is drdahlman.com, and that's D-R-D-A-H-L-M-A-N, drdahlman.com. And the one thing I'd like to say to everybody listening is if you suffer from any of this stuff, don't suffer. All of this can be resolved using an all-natural protocol, and you can get rid of IBS, Crohn's, colitis, and get off of any medications that you might be using for them.
Right. Don't give up hope.
Right, exactly.
Help's around the corner if you just want it. Well, thank you so much, David.
Well,
it's an excellent book. I've already given it to about 5 or 6 people in my life.
Great.
It was a great book.
Well, thanks for having me. I appreciate your
time. Thank you for coming on.
Yeah, bye-bye.
Bye-bye.